A leading engineering firm says New Zealand needs to get moving on creating a digital twin, and government should be considering it as part of a national digital strategy. A digital twin is a virtual modelling of something, say a building or a bridge, and takes real-world data to run simulations to see how it might perform. It can be a vital tool for engineers to see not just how something is performing now, but how it could perform in the future. So what about a model of the whole country? It's already been done in Singapore and in Britain. A national digital twin program is being worked by the Centre for Digital Built Britain. Thomas Hyde is the chief digital officer for the engineering firm Becker here, and says investing in a digital twin would have a big economic and social benefit, especially in light of the $23.4 billion announced earlier this month to be spent on transport and infrastructure over the next 3 years. Kia ora, Thomas. Welcome to 9 to Noon.
Yeah, kia ora, Catherine. Thanks for having me.
The simplest way I think of this, I used the example earlier, is Google Maps. If you're driving and you've got Google Maps in your car, you're digitally on your dashboard seeing exactly what you are doing in the virtual world. Is that a simple example?
Yeah, look, that's actually a really good example, because we talk about digital twins being something that looks like the real thing, is connected to the real thing and behaves like the real thing. And Google Maps is a great example where, you know, there's enough of it, a representation of the real thing in terms of how it looks like, just to at least show you how A is connected to B. It's connected to the real thing in the sense that, you know, information about how people are traveling around the network in terms of, you know, information shared from their devices is being used to sort of determine how long it's taking to get from point A to point B. And then there's a behaves-like element in terms of there's a simulation and behind the scenes to actually predict, based on all of that, how long it's going to take you to get from A to B. And it's that kind of concept that I guess we're talking about, how that might be applied to something like, you know, as you're designing an MIQ facility or looking across a factory and how the production lines are performing across the world or something like that.
The thing with Google Maps is it's real time. It's happening as I'm doing it, and I can see it doing exactly what I'm doing in digital form. When we start to get to more complex models, however, you begin to ask the question, how good are the inputs? Because any model is only good as good as the quality of its inputs.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the starting point is actually I'm trying to understand what's the insight that you're trying to get. You know, what's the question you're trying to answer? So the sorts of information that you might want to be accurate if you're thinking about, you know, master planning at a national level could be quite different to how accurate you want information if you're doing, you know, real-time prediction across a transport network, for example. I think we're in a situation at the moment, a lot of organizations who have big assets, so whether it's organizations like Waka Kotahi or others, actually they're blessed with a huge amount of information. The challenge is actually understanding in the middle of all of that what's the useful stuff. And that's where I think digital twins are quite useful, because it gives you that way of visualizing actually what does it all look like and what are the main questions we're trying to answer.
What are some examples of it already being done here, Thomas?
So, Wellington City Council's got a pretty good example. I think they've been taking quite a lead in terms of trying a few things and showing the art of the possible. They've been working with Build Media and a couple of others to show that. So things like demonstrating what it could look like across the city in terms of transport options and that kind of thing. And there are quite a few good examples around the world that I think New Zealand can borrow from. So, examples like, Singapore, who have done a full digital model of the entire city. They've had for a number of years a physical model that you could look at that showed what the city would look like in 50 years' time. They're pretty good at master planning for the long term in Singapore, and so they've done a digital version of that. But there are small-scale examples too. There's actually one in a city called Herrenberg, which is near Stuttgart in Germany, where they've used digital twins with the public to actually try and improve public spaces. So they've had, 1,000 people virtually walk through public parks or spaces and record their emotions as they've done that to say, actually, I feel pretty, this is pretty cool, or actually, I'm feeling pretty unsafe in this public space. So there's many, many examples emerging at the moment of different use cases for it.
That's really interesting, because that's not just a case of let's just design a model. I was just thinking of the architects who always had those beautiful physical models. I was interested to hear you describe that, because the physical models have long been around. But with the digital models, again, it's not just sitting there with your computer screen and whizzing something up. It's informed by actual real-life information. In the German example you gave, what people were actually experiencing in a space then is recorded and replicated in the digital form.
Absolutely. And so there are other examples, like, in Rennes in France, they're actually using a digital twin to help mediate disputes between neighbours about noise and those sorts of things. So there's lots of different applications for it. Absolutely.
What's happening with Britain, which seems to be way out in front with this, with its Centre for Digital Built Britain, although I don't know if you are familiar with Utopia, which is a fabulous Australian sitcom about, what's it called, that the Quango or government department's called Nation Building Australia. So sometimes having an organisation doesn't necessarily equate with where you're getting. But how far are they getting with the Centre for Digital Built Britain, and how ambitious is it?
It's quite ambitious. It's got quite a long time frame to it. So they've sort of said, 30 years to get to where they want to get to in terms of having everything digitised. But they're all, I think where they've made really good progress is actually getting good collaboration between the university sector, central government, but also industry, in terms of collaborating, in terms of trying to solve various problems. So in the meantime, they've created things like a construction innovation hub, and there's some quite useful research that's come out of there to look at. They've determined that for every dollar that's spent in terms of digital construction, in other words, making construction more efficient through the use of digital through that whole life cycle of projects, they're getting a $6 GDP benefit back. So there's a really strong economic benefit there. And so they're following through on that to look at, okay, well, how do you then make that real in terms of things like, offsite construction across national school programs or hospital programs and that kind of thing. So there's a lot that can be borrowed from that example. We're seeing that happen in Australia, in the states of Victoria and New South Wales. They've borrowed some of the Centre for Digital Built Britain thinking, and some of that's also translating across here, where we're seeing some of the government entities, starting to select some of the standards that have come out of there. But I guess we have the opportunity, New Zealand being the scale that we are, that we can probably cherry pick some of those things that are working overseas, but implement them a lot quicker. I mean, we don't have the three layers of government or the multiple layers of government perhaps some of those other locations have.
You think of procurement and tendering for road building or for the reconstruction of Christchurch. These were examples where you may as well have thrown a dart at the board, it seemed, by the time you got to the end of the project. And can digital twin projects be far more accurate because you can build in more what-ifs?
Absolutely. And you can also have a much more collaboration between the end owner of the asset, the constructor and the designer as you go. And actually, there was a really good recent example with Watercare, with the Waikato 50 project, which for people who live in Auckland will be familiar with the drought situation that we've had in Watercare, had a fairly rapid response in terms of increasing the capacity of being up the ability to pump treated water from the Waikato River. And so that's effectively a $150 million plant. And it went from no design, no project, through design, construction, and the thing commissioned within under 12 months. And that was because, to your point, that was quite a different agile procurement approach. The constructor, Watercare, and the designers were all in the same team together, all using the same digital information. So as the thing was being designed, the constructors are building it. But then what we could also do is capture the digital information of what had been built and compare it to the model, so that you dramatically reduce errors, rework. And what happened is you got further along the project, you could start looking at, okay, well, what do the people who are going to be running this thing, what information do they need to know that actually we've probably got most of that already, or perhaps we need to prune it back a little bit or capture a few other bits and pieces, so that actually the things up, you know, ready to operate. And I think it's a great example of the efficiency and cost effectiveness that can be achieved if we're able to actually alter our procurement approach.
Just finally, we're on the cusp, as you pointed out, of a massive spend again on infrastructure and on roads. And shall we pick something like that's long been talked about, like the Golden Triangle, Auckland, Hamilton, Tauranga? Now we're talking trains here, roads. We're possibly looking at new townships, entire townships popping up. I'm thinking of the Sleepyhead Initiative just as one example, maybe a lot, and Sleepyhead have said this, they expect a lot of logistics firms might relocate out of Auckland and come and base themselves around that town. How would you turn that kind of overall development with all these disparate players into a digital twin project? I mean, practically, what does it take?
Look, I think that's a tremendous example of the Golden Triangle. I think the first step is to create a relatively small master planning function, you know, a small team of people building a digital twin. But that digital twin, really all it does is import information from, you know, the Sleepyheads, the local councils, the Waka Kotahis and so on, to actually just assemble, here's the view of all the projects happening in that region, and provide a bit of a decision support service in a way. It's sort of gluing between the high level central government policy and then the various projects that each of these entities are trying to do, and actually help look for where's the opportunity to join the dots, you know, where can we get some better outputs, or where might be there's some gaps, like we're going to go and put a whole lot of people into this location, but hey, we've forgotten to think about the stormwater, or hey, maybe we need to, you know, widen this transport corridor, or actually, maybe the school that we thought was going to be here, maybe we need to move it a little bit further down the road. Those kinds of things. But I think also you can then look at, okay, well, where are all the construction materials going to come from? What's the opportunity to take a golden triangle perspective on that? And at the same time you're doing that, look at, okay, well, how do we, you know, minimise the carbon footprint with, you know, all the concrete that we're about to procure and all that sort of stuff? I think that would be a really good example. If you get that working well, I think it'll generate more demand for, you know, widening that activity out across the country. And as you say, when you're talking about $20+ billion worth of investment in the actual concrete and steel and other bits and pieces, diverting a bit of that into some ones and zeros to improve the decision making feels like a pretty good investment.
I mean, the potential is there. The question is whether the people factor, the bureaucracy factor, can chuck off some old behaviours and make it happen. And, you know, fingers crossed they can, because there's so much to happen so fast. And you mentioned the health developments as well. We look at this pandemic and we look at the need for speed against the need, of course, to be reliable and scientifically accurate and communicated well. But the potential is there to radically speed up the way we do things, Thomas.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think there's a window here. You know, this is the largest change to the fabric of New Zealand since the Great Depression of the last century. So, you know, it would be a shame to waste that opportunity.
Thank you, Thomas Hyde of the engineering firm Becker.